Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
All right, welcome back to the Survival and Basic Badass Podcast, Kevin and Chuck. Today, we're going to talk guerrilla gardening. Guerrilla gardening, Kevin, what is guerrilla gardening? Like, I don't even...
It is kind of a broad term. Basically, it's gardening on plots of land that you don't own. Planting stuff on other people's property without their knowledge or consent.
Okay. Now, I think I do want to bring this in a little bit for our definition. Into the kind of, we're going to talk a little bit about like that secret garden of survival kind of Rick Austin kind of stuff. Just having food plots that aren't your traditional food plots where everyone's like, hey, there's the big farm. We're going to go through it like a freaking locust through a field, you know, and destroy it when the shit hits the fan, right? We want your own. And I figure in a world where we're looking at inflation, it's kind of time to maybe think of ensuring our food supply. Now, you know me, I'm always talking about rabbits. Now, rabbits, we're going to talk a little bit later about food bombs or seed bombs, but rabbits might come into play there, I'm just saying. But anyway, so original, where did it even come from? Like, who even started this?
Right.
Where did we get guerrilla gardening? I mean, I guess it's been around for forever, right? You know, you had the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, and they just kind of had food everywhere. I guess they didn't have to worry about it. But I know they talked about Cain and Abel when they started their thing. They went out and created gardens and did farming.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the main one that a lot of people think of when they think of guerrilla gardening is Johnny Appleseed. Right. John Chapman was his actual name. And he was a real dude. It wasn't, you know, a lot of people think that that was like a Paul Bunyan story, but he was an actual guy.
He didn't have a blue ox or anything, though.
No, none of that stuff.
But my understanding, he did actually have a tin bowl that he wore as a hat. Now, that I heard is true.
Yeah, that's a real thing. That's a real thing. It's a little bit crazy to me, but whatever.
So maybe he's actually like the original prepper if he's wearing a tin hat. I mean, he was ahead of the curve.
He's wearing a pot
on his
head. They
weren't getting into his brain.
Yeah. Well, they said he used that pot as a hat and to make apple mash for hard apple cider.
So he's like borderline Puritan, borderline bartender, borderline alcoholic, all round good guy is what you're getting at.
Yep. Yep. Good dude. So, back in the, early 1700s or late 1700s, early 1800s, he basically, he had worked on a farm and had collected a bunch of seeds. Apple
well,
seeds.
Wait, I can give you a little more background here. There was the Ohio Company had decided they wanted Ohio. They had basically settled one main area and they wanted to expand, you know, and kind of grow the people out. And they said, look, we'll give 100 acres to anybody who can establish that they're going to live on this 100 acres. And what they gave as their definition of establish is you needed 50 apple trees and you needed 20 peach trees. Because they figure trees are like a long-term investment, right? You're not going to go somewhere and then pick up and leave. You're not going to bother planting a bunch of trees if you're planning on picking up and leaving. So right. Johnny Appleseed, my guess, probably read like Think and Grow Rich and was like, you know, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to see things going. So he got together, like you said, actually his brother and him. His brother wasn't necessarily outside, like, spreading the seeds, but his brother was doing the whole nursery thing with him. And they started cultivating kind of nurseries. So his plan was, I'm going to go ahead of where the settlers are. I'm going to start all these trees, and then I'm going to sell them the trees for 6 cents a piece. Now, that was, like, cheap, even back in the day. Like, 6 cents was a good price. All right. So what he would do is he would actually go to the cider mills because that's where they had a lot of mash and stuff. And he would grab all the seeds he could because at the cider mill, I mean, you got freaking seeds everywhere and it's all sloppy, soupy, whatever. And he would go and he would drop these seeds. So he would go start it. And once he kind of got it going in an area, he would grab a caretaker guy and be like, hey, can you kind of keep this going? And he'd train him up and whatever and work this for me. I'm going to move on to the next, you know, one. And he would go all around, all the way down to Indiana. So, I mean, he just kept going, starting off these seeds to help the settlements get started. Now, he ended up being like a super generous and helpful guy, like trying to get people going. I think that definitely worked to his advantage as far as being a kind of capitalist. I know everyone hates that word. They're like, oh, evil, that's trying to cash in on other people. But he ended up making things awesome for everybody, right? Like, he ended up dying. He had 1,200 acres in it. To himself that he and that was kind of spread out all around. He had all these plots and that was because he started all these, you know, apple orchards and had things going. And the guy was just kicking ass and came back. But because of that, he was able to help so many people because of his thoughtfulness. You know, I kind of think back like when they made U.S. Steel. They were like, oh, if we have a monopoly in one company, they're going to freaking come in and control prices and everybody's going to, you know, be priced out of the steel market. And instead, U.S. Steel was like, wait a minute. If we make the prices really low, people will come up with all kinds of uses for steel and they'll use it for everything and we'll be the king of the world because everyone will be using steel. That's a way better business model. And I feel like Johnny Appleseed was already on this. He's like, look, if I make apples super cheap and affordable and everybody can freaking grow them and do it and get their own shit going, then I can be the apple king of the freaking world. And turns out things are going to be better. Now, there was a secret hidden bonus. And, you already know where I'm going with this. It's that hard cider and Applejack. And turns out the seeds, because they were coming from the cider mill, a lot of the original variations that came out of these apple trees were pretty much the more bitter apples that, you know, they weren't your typical like Red Delicious and whatever. Although I say that, and it turns out he's actually credited with creating Red Delicious apples. He created Golden Delicious apples, because when you plant a seed, it's one of those you never know what you're going to get, because it's just a variation. When you want to clone a tree, they end up taking like a branch and going from that. Whereas if you actually start right from seed, then you kind of get what you get. But he actually made where, you know, they were great for everybody getting liquored up. Now, you have more on that, or is that, did I already kind of oversell that?
No, that, yeah, that's it. But, you know, I read a lot of descriptions of him.
Okay.
And they always said that he had like ratty clothes and wore a pot on his head and didn't wear shoes. Like he was like a guy that really lived off the land.
Yes.
You know? And a lot of people think of him as some sort of hillbilly, and he kind of was. You know, that was kind of his jam.
I think going out
and,
comes,
you know,
to mind.
Living off the land and creating. Right. Right. Now, funny thing, though, he almost died when he was pretty early off. What had happened was he was up in a tree picking something out of it, and he fell, and his head got caught in the crook of a tree. Well, like he was just dangling by his head in between two branches.
That can't be good.
And he couldn't get out. So his assistant, who is an 8-year-old boy,
nice,
came along and found him there. And he had to wait until this 8-year-old chopped the tree down so he could get out.
That is pretty awesome.
So, you know, I mean, remember, start teaching your kids how to handle an axe early on. It might save your life.
Right. Now, I have to point out that once again, you've probably never heard me say this, but I'm a little bit anti-government. I kind of wish they would mind their own damn business. It turns out they didn't like his apple trees because everybody was making, you know, hard cider with it and spreading it around. And so the government actually sent people out to rip out all the trees that he planted because they were just tired of it. Because, you know, that's what good government does. That's how you help the people.
That's what government does, yep.
You know, you got to look out for people, right?
Yeah, so apparently there's only one apple tree left that he actually, that they know he planted.
Yes.
And it's 150 years old, and they said it looks terrible. It's all gnarled and fucked up looking, but it's still alive. But that's the only one. It's in Indiana somewhere. It's actually in Indiana on the property of a bar. So, you know, there you go. Keeping the tradition alive.
Now, they did say that I think they keep propagating from that tree to have, you know, the one of the ones. But, yeah, no, he gets credit with a lot of the apple seeds. So, anyway, just a thought. He's one of the original badasses. I actually, in my research, kind of look like New York City, there were some anarchists. And, you know, Kevin can definitely connect with some anarchists. I know you're not exactly anarchy boy, but anytime we can stick it to the man, I think Kevin's in.
Yeah, I'm kind of pro sticking it to the man. That is kind of my favorite thing.
So in 1973, a group called the Green Gorillas, they were going to stick it to the man by going around and planting gardens all over New York City. Because, come on, that would show, you know, the government who's boss, right? Because that's what people don't get, though, is if you can take care of yourself, nothing sticks it to the man any more than that. Because if you can handle all your own shit, then there's nothing that they can take away from you, you know? That's the beauty of it. When you have your own food, your own money, your own shit, then there's nothing that they can really do.
That's right. So now there's a little bit of a controversy when it comes to guerrilla gardening. There's two camps. So one camp is basically focusing on natural, you know, things that are naturally growing in that area, native plants. And the other camp is for promoting like the most amount of food production. So, you know, a lot of guerrilla gardening started off in cities where people were basically going into vacant lots and planting flowers and butterfly bushes and shit to make it look pretty, make it look, you know, less crappy. You know, we're kind of more talking about the food production side of that, but it is important to note that a lot of the guerrilla gardening are basically just hippies that live in cities that want things to look pretty, and you know, whatever. I don't have any problem with flowers. You're but okay. If you're going to feed yourself, flowers aren't a whole lot, you know, aren't very good for that. Another thing that
let me stop you. You have to feed your soul with things that are beautiful. Or why even live? All right. No, sorry,
that's right. Amen, brother.
As you were.
Yeah. So a lot of these gardens that were popping up in cities were they were planted by people that, you know, they weren't trying to sell this produce. They were trying to get other people involved in helping them with the gardens. And then, you know, a lot of people were getting a blowback saying, well, aren't you scared that people are just going to come along and steal your food? But the idea with these gardens was that you do steal the food. It's for everybody. Right. Like if you see ripe fruit, pick it and take it. You know, if you have access to, you know, to kale and strawberries and things like that, you know, if all you ever see is red hot Cheetos at the convenience store, you're going to think that's what food is. But if you see kale, you know, kale and spinach and shit growing everywhere, you're going to realize that food, you know, can be produced on your own by yourself for free.
Right.
And, you know, it makes a big difference for inner city kids. You know, and I think that that's actually important shit to do.
Right. No, I actually watched a TED talk on a guy in South Central LA, or South Central, and I guess he said they've changed the name. It's not South Central anymore. Now it's like Southern LA or something. And he's like, here are the pictures where it was a shithole when it was South Central. And here are the same pictures as it is a shithole now that it's, you know, South LA or whatever. But, yeah, you know, you change the name, exactly, you make things better. But anyway, he was like, look, doing exactly that. And once again, my favorite theme, the government stepped in. What the fuck are you doing? You can't plant. Because I guess he talked about how they have a row in front of the houses of land that they're obligated to maintain. So the guy's like, well, if I got to maintain it, how cool would it be if I made a garden right here? And they were like, oh, God.
Right.
Well, of course, some nosy Nelly had to go complain first because, you know, that's what we do.
It always takes some sort of care getting shit.
Because, you know, why the fuck wouldn't you be like, well, damn it, growing things, motherfucker. And it doesn't look normal. And then so the government came in and was like, hey, you're fucked up. Don't, you know, you need to tear it all out and destroy shit because that's what governments do. We make things better. You all need to be the same and have the same shitty grass out front. Right. Now, if you had a pile of garbage out front, government be like, yeah, that looks about right. That's you know your place. Anyway, after a little battle with the government, then all of a sudden, this is a great idea. Maybe you could inspire people to do it everywhere. And then, you know, they kind of came around. So that's kind of taking off there. And it's exactly what
you said. Well, they came around, but he asked for a small amount of funding, and they're like, well, oh, no.
Whoa.
We're not going to give you, we're not going to help you in
any
way.
If you want, we can up the amount of welfare that people get. But, yeah, helping people help themselves, that sounds like a bad idea. That sounds too risky. It's too radical. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, Detroit is doing a lot of the same thing, you know, where they're taking a lot of the empty lots and making food. And that's the thing. Like, you have to drive to get food from these places to get like real produce, and then it's a fortune, and then it turns out you can grow that shit for free like anywhere.
Right.
So one of the things, like, I know in the 70s, the Green Gorillas, the way they did it, they actually made these seed bombs. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have some stuff on that?
Well, I mean, I could tell you how to make the seed bomb at home.
Tell me what we could do.
So basically, what you want to do is start with some compost. 5 cups of compost. It's not a whole lot. You know, you can make that at home. You can buy it from the store. Then you pick the seeds you want. You know, basically, you're going to choose the seeds based on where you're planning on doing this food bombing. You're going to use 2 to 3 cups of clay to, like, pack it together, you know, to hold itself together. You're going to get it all wet and let it dry out so it's, you know, like a solid item. And then you just got to find a spot of a bare spot of land and throw your fucking bomb. Bomb it.
That only sounds right.
So you can do that with flowers. You can do that with lettuce. You can do that with any type of seed you're interested in.
I like it. And that's it. Then you have, you know, you start growing stuff around. One, it may not be something you can control and protect, but it might get that other people have access to food where they're not necessarily coming to your shit. You know, that's the beauty of it.
Right.
And a lot of seeds, they need to kind of overwinter. So you'll have winter time, and then after the cold, then they'll end up sprouting, you know, in the springtime. They actually need that cold in order to, you know, propagate and grow. So that's something to be aware of. Now, I did see, I was searching out, you know, different people and ways to do this. And one of the girls on there was like, yeah, you know, I was always fascinated with James Bond and Q and all the, you know, stealthy, you know, KGB and secret gadgets. And they were like, I knew I wanted that to be a part of my life. And I'm like, all right, you know, whatever. And she's like, I'm a designer.
Whatever floats your boat, right?
You know, whatever. So she's like, I'm a designer, and I just want the world around me. I want to design it and make it more beautiful. So she's like, I found a way to do this guerrilla gardening all stealthy. And what she ended up doing was she had like a briefcase with a little auger inside it. So she could walk into the park and set it down and like drill a little hole. And then she would open it and like slide the cup with the plant in it and drop it in and then stealthily walk away. She had rigged up some kind of gear that had a pinwheel, I guess, that would like put the holes and drop a seed in each one as she stepped. So every step she took, it would drop a seed, you know, in the ground. And I'm like, hey,
fancy.
You know, there's some clever tricks you guys can come up with. Or you could just go out with like a little hand shovel and just drop the seed. Or you could drop these seed bombs, might be a little easier, you know. But hey, you do you, right? That's what it all comes down to. You know, you
and
do
remember
your own
the
thing.
fun of this sort of thing is it's against the law. You know, you can get arrested for cultivating, you know, gardens on other people's property. Not necessarily something that's just free to do.
Yeah, it's
so
amazing. What's
if you want to get
law,
your guerrilla garden started, so what you want to do first thing, you're going to want to find the land. You can do it along a sidewalk, between buildings, sides of overpasses. But you want to do it someplace near a water source, whether that's a stream or a pond, or just, you know, like maybe a building next door that has a big downspout, you know, that produces a lot of water anytime it rains. You want to identify the condition of the soil. Basically, you know, is it rocky? Is it full of weeds? Is it clay? Is it sandy? And you're going to want to get your plants based on what you have available. Not, you know, you don't want to cultivate your land to grow what you want to grow. You want to find the land that, you know, find the plants that's best suited for that spot. You want to like have hardy plants. Plants that grow naturally in that area are the best ones to go with. And you want to go with inexpensive plants. You don't want to spend a fortune on something that you're not, you know, you're not really going to be able to do a daily maintenance with these things and go out and water them every day and that sort of thing. You want to basically, you know, plant it and then have as little interaction as possible until you're harvesting.
Yeah, the old school set it and forget it.
Right, right. So you want to, like, basically plan out your first guerrilla mission, you know? Go at night or go, you know, during a time when there aren't a lot of people around paying attention. And, you know, do your planning. And then you want to basically do as much as you can to maintain the garden without having to actually maintain the garden. In other words, you want to get the garden prepped and ready to go before you do any of the planting. And then that way, you know, once you get the seeds in the ground, nature will take its course. Now, a lot of people think of gardening as being like a labor intensive project, and it can be if you want it to be. But a lot of these plants that are edible, they just grow. They grow in your area. I know when I was a kid, I'd know where to go and find the blueberries. I'd know where to go and find apple trees. I'd know where to go and find, you know, certain times a year, asparagus would be growing wild. You know, and if you know what you're looking for, you can still forage in even urban areas and find things that are edible. Right. So what you want to do is focus on those types of plants that are naturally growing and just produce more of them.
Right. That's the beauty of it. It's funny because I've always tried to do like blueberry bushes, and damn, it's like such a fight, right? Like I'm freaking, you know, trying to get this thing to grow, and it's this, you know, like a square foot, you know, and it just won't do anything. And then I moved to where I am, and my neighbor lady's like, oh, you know, my grandmother has blueberries. Can you come pick some? We have too many, and we need people to pick them. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Dude, I left with like 2 5-gallon buckets, and I was there for an hour. I'm like, holy shit, you know? I mean, like, you can't even fathom. But that's the thing. Once this stuff gets established and takes off, you just really kind of need to get lucky and find the right place that it's going to grow. But like Kevin said, look at what's growing and look at where it's growing. You know, when you have the natural blueberries and the natural raspberries and blackberries, you know, growing out of the bushes, go in there and propagate it. Make it, you know, maybe cut back some of the other shit a little bit, because, you know, if it is enjoying the shade and the environment it's got, you don't want to fuck up the environment. But can you maybe grow that area a little bit? You know, and that was the thing. I'm like, all right, you got these blueberries that are kicking ass. Can I steal, you know, apart and start my own from yours, you know? And that's something, you know, I put the wife on. But that's the kind of thing. You need to see what's already working in your area and then try and make it work. Now, some of the stealthier things you can do are like potatoes, garlic, a lot of the buried stuff, oregano, basil. I mean, obviously oregano and basil aren't buried, but the potatoes, garlic, carrots, that kind of thing are, you know, again, growing on top, tomatoes, artichokes, that kind of thing. People aren't going to notice as much. They're going to notice tomatoes, but those kind of things, you could create a food source. In that Secret Garden of Survival, he always talked about he'd do a tree, like an apple tree or a fruit tree, plant some kind of vine that grows around it, like grapes, that kind of thing, then do shrubs around that, then herbs around that, and then do ground cover like buckwheat or something like that on the bottom. And it basically creates an ecosystem that takes care of itself. And that's the beauty. Mm-hmm. And you can get these things. If you're trying to have the stealthy garden in the backyard, I mean, that's really the way to go. You should maybe check out some of the Rick Austin stuff. He really is a little rough of a guy, I think, but he's really got a lot of the ideas that, you know, can really take your garden to the next level. And, you know, pulling out buckets of food, that's one of the things. Like, I go through my woods and there's just grapes growing in the trees, but the ones that aren't getting eaten by the birds are the ones that are all intertwined with other trees and hidden. You know, if you have the big grape bunches just hanging out on your big, you know, fancy lattice thing or whatever, it's not the same. You know, you need to encourage things to grow in their natural environment, and you will end up getting better yields and better results. And that's the beauty. It's when we try and do it in our traditional, oh, you know, look, we have an apple orchard and we have grass all around it and whatever. Well, then you have the grass and the apples fighting for the same nutrients. You don't have anything keeping the bugs away from the apple trees. So they just come in and you end up having to use tons of pesticides and all kinds of shit to keep it growing because you don't have other stuff working with it. If you have the herbs and the things that are going to keep the flies away, or, you know, the different predatory bugs, then you can maybe, you know, implement it.
Now, there are a lot of historically, there is a lot of different groups that were doing these types of things. So one of the earlier ones was Gerard Winstanley, mid-1600s. Basically, he started a group called the True Levelers. And what they would do was they would go out to people's properties that were not, you know, not really being maintained, and would just slash and burn everything, cut all the hedges out, and just plant shit. This was in England. So it went on for a few years, and it actually got, you know, a big following. And then, you know, people kind of caught on, rich people kind of caught on, and basically came and burned all his shit down. And, you know, you have to realize, you know, a lot of these situations, the town will come through and just bulldoze all your shit. So you don't want to invest too much work in it because, you know, it's not your property. You know, somebody can just come and tear it all out, and there's nothing you can do about it. In Cleveland, Ohio, there was a hole in the sidewalk, like just a big hole in the sidewalk. And so people started planting like all sorts of vegetables in this hole. That's how big the hole in the sidewalk was, that they were growing vegetables in it. And the town basically came and cut it all down and fixed the sidewalk. So, I mean, you have to keep in mind that, you know, there's no protection on this garden that you're building. So you don't want to invest too much energy into it because there's no recourse if somebody just comes and tears it all down. There was a situation in I don't remember where it was. It was along the line of a railroad track that was not used anymore. There was no cars going down these tracks anymore. And so people just started growing gardens on the railroad's property all along this track, and went on fine for a couple of years. And then the railroad company caught wind of it and just came and bulldozed everything down. It's their property, and they can do what they want. So something to just keep in mind that, you know, with this sort of gardening style, you don't want to invest too much energy into it. You want to basically, like we were saying earlier, set and forget. You know, get it growing, and then stop working on it. You know, don't worry about weeds and that sort of thing. You just want to do what you can do to get the biggest harvest with it, with the least amount of energy and least amount of money.
That's it.
And a few cents, you know, a few cents can get you enough seeds to produce, you know, a couple $100 worth of plants and produce.
Right. I mean, that's the beauty of it, and especially if you choose correctly, you know, and that's it. Like, a lot of people get excited about gardening, but they want to do zero effort into figuring it out, and they'll just, oh, you know what? I like bananas. Let me plant a bunch of banana trees, or, you know, I like peaches or whatever, and that may not grow where you live. To be honest, apple trees don't grow great where I live. But where Kevin lives, apple trees are freaking awesome. You know, it's you get what you get in your environment. You know, figs, right? Kevin can't really grow figs. I can probably get away with it where I am, you know, with a fig tree. Figs, I know people do grow them up in New York. They end up taking their fall leaves and they bunch it up all around the tree. And that way it kind of insulates it and protects it. But yeah, that's a commitment, you know. You got to really, you know, commit and make effort to what you want. But if you do the research, you can get affordable plants that give you a big yield that people actually want to eat. And how cool is that? And sometimes you can grow from seed as opposed to, you know, these starter plants that you get from the store and whatever. But you might have to start things. You know, that's, it's all different things, because you might, once things are established and a little hardier, they can take care of themselves. It's kind of like a child, you know, when you have a little baby, yeah, you can't just drop a baby off in the wild and expect it to live. It's not going to happen. You know, it takes some time of cultivating and teaching and training, and then you can, you know, fend for yourself. Turns out in our modern world, you can get to like 40 and we could drop you off in the wild and you'd die in a day or two. You know, it's hit or miss, you know, it just depends on the world, you know, the training and the attention that you give it. And it's the same thing with plants. You give it a little bit of attention, you put a little effort, a little research into how to, you know, do it properly, you might get good results. Works with kids, works with plants. I'm just saying. Turns out we could have a world where people aren't all fucked up. I'm just saying. Like in a movie or something, that might happen. I don't know.
Right.
But bottom line, find places that aren't being used. There's a lot of things. Think about parks, you know, national forest kind of thing, state land. There is a lot of land out there that goes untouched and does not get human contact. And there are things that grow in the shade, you know, that you can go out and, you know, plant in the right area. There's different things you can get going. A lot of the berries and stuff, like I said, I have really dense forest in my backyard and it is full of grapes all over the place. And I mean, I keep trying to add to it, you know, and make it bigger and better. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, hey, that's what wants to grow here. I always get confused and can never tell the difference between poison ivy and raspberries unless there's freaking berries on it, right? I'm like, motherfucker, goddamn poison ivy coming out all over my shooting lane. And then 2 weeks later, I'm like, wait, there's berries everywhere. And I'm like, wait a minute. That might not have been poison ivy. But, you know, you never know. And, of course, there's always poison ivy, like, right next to it. Because that's, you know, like, hey, let me fuck with you a little bit. Like, you don't know.
You'll find, they seem to grow in the same spot, yeah, don't they?
I always get, like, in the wife's garden, she'll have her plants, and there'll be weeds that look almost exactly like it right next to it. Mm-hmm. She'll be like, no, that's a weed. That's a plant. And I'm like, I can't tell the difference. And because the weeds know, hey, you're probably not going to cut me down if I'm, because that's, you know, the way shit works, right? It's just kind of wacky like
right.
that. Now, Kevin, you said you have some concerns that actually make you feel like we might need to be taking care of ourselves. Like we might be at war at any given day. Like all of a sudden the food supply, the world could all get fucked up. I mean, what's going on? Why am I even caring about producing my own food? There is a grocery store like 3 miles away. Why do I even care? Why should I even think about this?
You know, I know people have a lot of mixed feelings about Nancy Pelosi. You know, I hear a lot of rude talk about her, about how she's making money off of insider trading. I hear people say rude things about her big sloppy boobs, about how she looks like the Crypt Keeper. You know, just terrible things. People
say
terrible things.
Luckily, you would never say that kind of thing. Right.
I would never say anything about her her disgusting wrinkly face. So people were upset that she went to Taiwan.
Okay.
Because I guess people are scared of China. You know, they're scared that the Chinese will I don't know. I guess they ended up like launching some missiles into the ocean and killing some fish. I guess it was like really terrifying for some people. There was a lot of like blowback with her going there. People didn't like it. I saw videos of Chinese men in China slapping themselves in the face because they're so humiliated that Nancy Pelosi would go to Taiwan. They feel like they own Taiwan, even though the people in Taiwan don't want to be owned by China. They feel like they saw what happened to Hong Kong and how they just murdered all the protesters and put them all in prison. And so that they could make it a communist paradise. And they're scared that China is going to make Taiwan a communist paradise. And I guess China feels like they can tell us what we can and cannot do, which, you know, personally, I'm not scared of China. They're kind of a bullshit second rate power. People want to talk about how they're the next world power, but they're not. They're bullshit. They run a country full of slaves. Slaves don't invent things. Slaves can't come up with their own ideas. All slaves do is work. They don't come up with new ideas or better ways to do things. They have to do that. They have to steal those ideas from free countries like the United States. China's a paper tiger. You know, like, I don't know why people are so scared of them. Their military is half the size of ours. We have 7 aircraft carriers, 6 aircraft carriers. They have 1, maybe 2 now. So I don't know why people are so fucking worried about it. I know that this podcast is downloaded in China by the Chinese government. And I know that if I go to China ever in my life, I can be arrested for what I've already said on this podcast, let alone what I'm saying right now. But people were getting really fucking nervous. And I think that when your fears are dictating how you behave, you start doing dumb shit. And you start, start letting weak bitches bully you and push you around. I have the same feelings about the Ukraine. Everybody's saying, oh, the United States military can't go into the Ukraine because it'll start a nuclear war. Russia will launch nuclear missiles and attack the United States. You know, I mean, that makes sense. That does make sense if you're like some sort of a limp dick loser. But if you're a winner and you've got a big hard cock, you don't worry about that shit because you know that half of those missiles won't even go off. You know what I mean? They stole all the fucking parts from it. The other half, all that uranium's been sold off to the Middle Eastern terrorists. They don't even have that shit. Maybe they'll hit like New York and Washington, D.C., but those places are already messed up. You know what I mean? Whatever, dude. You're going to incinerate a bunch of senators and congressmen? Nobody really cares. Nobody's going to be upset about that. Nobody cares about that shit. I feel like the United States is full of a bunch of fucking Nancy bitches that are scared about what everybody else is going to do instead of just deciding your own fucking destiny. You know what I mean? We, as Americans, have always been the ones on the cutting edge, the ones that are always doing the important shit, making the big first steps in the right direction. And now we're full of a bunch of fucking fairies that are scared about, you know, scared about what's going to happen to them. You can't live in fear, man. Just do whatever you want to do. Don't let other people tell you what you can and can't do. China can't dictate what the United States does. You know, the shit just makes me angry. And people are getting all fucking, you know, worried about shit like that. Let them try. Try. See what happens. Fuck around and find out, you know?
All right. You're saying you're going to bend Putin over and make him your bitch, right? Now, for all of you
who've been... I'm not scared of him.
All right. So for all of you who've been bitching at me saying, you know, you should let Kevin talk more, this is what happens. I'm just saying.
This is what you get.
If you want to open that door, that's what's going to walk out. You know, you're like, oh, look at the cute puppy. Let's let him in. He could sleep in the bedroom. And then you get fucking that shit. So I'm just saying, you know, hey.
Yeah. And it's a good thing, though, that we don't have that many listeners, that many people that listen to this podcast, because I feel like I'd be canceled every week, you know?
Yeah.
But what are you going to do?
That may be true. I don't know. We're going to put you on the TikTok, right? I think that whole rant is going to be on TikTok because I don't know what else I could do. I mean, I feel like my options, my hands are tied. I'm going to have to set you up. I may be able to pull that off. I don't know exactly how TikTok works, but I'm going to make it happen. There are a few videos on there and they're kind of bullshit, like little, you know, snippets, but I guess that's what TikTok is. But you guys may want to check it out because we're going to try and spread some of Kevin's intelligent, articulate, political thought out into the world. See if we can help shape America into the country that it was meant to be. Grow a set of balls and slap them across Putin's face. You know, something along that line.
Mm-hmm.
you know, make him his bed.
Yeah, just a little teabagging. I'm not talking about anything too aggressive.
No. You know? Oh, shit. All right. So, you guys, you want to check us out on YouTube? You may want to subscribe to the channel. I've been trying to put up a couple of these episodes every couple of weeks. You may want to have questions, concerns, thoughts, show ideas. You can email us at preppingbadass@gmail.com. You know what? It would be awesome if you went to wherever you're downloading this, and if they have reviews, if you reviewed the podcast, that would be appreciated. Help spread it.
That would be great if any of you guys had a chance to give us some reviews. It definitely helps out the podcast.
We appreciate it. And with that, stay safe. We'll talk to you guys next week.
The Survival and Basic Badass Podcast is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. For even more content, be sure to watch the original films from HuntStand Presents on the Waypoint TV channel every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Visit waypointtv.com to learn more.